Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, a Radio Free Europe podcast on developments in Russia, its war against Ukraine, and its relations with the rest of the world. I'm Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL, and author of The Week in Russia newsletter. This week's podcast is about Russia's war against Ukraine, as it often is, with a focus in part on the question of Western aid for Kyiv and also Western policy, what the West and in particular the European Union can do or must do to help Ukraine fight off the full-scale Russian invasion as it heads toward a third year with no sign of an end anytime soon. And my guest today is on The Week Ahead in Russia is Marie Dumoulin, director of the Wider Europe program at the European Council on Foreign Relations. Thanks very much for joining me, Marie.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Great to have you on the show. First-time guest. Much appreciated. We're now 3 weeks into 2024, and in just over 1 month, Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine will enter its third year. And while I don't think there are many people in this world who believe the war will end this year, it does seem like what happens in 2024 could go a long way toward determining the outcome of the biggest war in Europe since 1945. Now, one big factor, of course, is Western aid, including financial aid and, most important, weapons. The fate of future U.S. aid remains unknown 3 months after President Joe Biden proposed a package that includes more than $61 billion in mostly military support for Ukraine. About $50 billion of it is for weapons. And that package so far is stymied in Congress. But I'd like to focus today on another $50 billion, the proposed 50 billion euro package that Hungary blocked last month in the European Union. Marie, how important is that package for Ukraine? And what do you think are the prospects for its approval? I'm interested in your thoughts.
So the package is more about macro-financial assistance and humanitarian assistance to Ukraine than about military assistance, strictly speaking. It is important because that money is supposed to help Ukraine, the Ukrainian state, to continue to function despite the war, and to continue to pay salaries, etc. And the other important element is that it's a 4 years package. So it's supposed also to give Ukraine visibility on the money it will be able to rely on for the next 4 years. And that's one of the aspects that Hungary has been questioning. Viktor Orban says he may be ready to agree to this package, provided it is divided in four parts and subject to approval every year in the coming next 4 years, which of course would reduce the visibility Ukraine can have on this assistance. The other element Viktor Orban puts forward is has to do with EU funding for Hungary, and so has nothing to do basically with Ukraine. This discussion on the support package to Ukraine is basically interrelated to discussions on EU budget itself, and Hungary can now rely also on the support of another EU member state. Slovakia has a couple of days ago signaled that it agreed to some of Hungary's positions. So it will not be an easy discussion. The head of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has signaled a few days ago that the Commission is also working on alternative scenarios if an agreement was not possible with the 27 EU member states, to make the agreement possible with a more limited number of member states. But of course, the better scenario is that EU member states and all of them agree to this package. Also, because in terms of political signaling, it's better for EU member states to display unity than disunity. And that's one of the things that they had been able to display since the beginning of the Russian invasion, that they share common goals and a common understanding of this war. If they begin to show disunity, that would probably play into the Russian narrative that ultimately the Western unity and the European unity on this war is going to erode, and more generally, that Western support to Ukraine is going to erode.
Right, and that's exactly what many people believe is Putin's kind of best hope. I guess a while ago it was kind of described as his last hope, the idea that that Western unity would flag, and with it supplies of aid and in particular weapons. And I guess I just wanted to ask a follow-up question. Your description of the situation with Hungary reminded me a little bit of the situation in the United States, where you have discussions, essentially agreement on this $61 billion aid package, or part of it, is contingent on an agreement in Congress, or between Congress and the administration, on reform changes along the U.S. southern border, the border with Mexico. So two things that are very much unrelated. But my question is, in terms of there's a chance as the Congress deliberates on this, there's no real timeline in terms of, we don't know when it might be approved, if it is approved. But do you think the U.S. Deliberations have any kind of effect on those in the EU about this package?
I'm not sure they have. And if they do, then it would rather play into more decisive action by EU member states. Because the Russian invasion of Ukraine is probably more vital to European security than it is to US security, although I would argue that it is also a vital interest for US security interests. But because it is vital, a number of EU member states also sees a challenge of being able to sustain the support to Ukraine, whatever comes next in the US. So in terms of agenda, I don't think it will have a big impact because the decision is supposed to be made next week at the European Council on the 1st of February. Whether the hesitations, let's put it that way, on the US side have an impact on the longer term on how Europeans see the potential developments in this war and whether there is any chance to prevail for Ukraine is probably a different question. There is a risk of a self-fulfilling effect with Europeans beginning to doubt that they will be able to sustain that effort over the long run if the US is not on board, and thus are tempted to reduce their support to Ukraine because anyway it will not prevail. That would be very dangerous. And again, I think a lot of European leaders are aware of the vital nature of this conflict for European security, and are willing to continue the support, whatever it takes. But definitely, there are concerns regarding the future of US assistance.
Okay, thanks very much. And now my second question is broader, but it also involves European support for Ukraine. Marie, how do you see EU support shaping up in 2024? I guess I mean in terms of financial and weapons support, among other things. Is this year going to be marked by an increase or a decrease in EU backing for Kyiv, or maybe it will remain the same? And from your point of view, what is the most important element? Sorry, there are a few questions here, I guess. But from your point of view, what is the most important element of EU support? And essentially, what does the European Union need to do this year when it comes to defending Ukraine against Russia?
So there are a couple of uncertainties regarding EU assistance to Ukraine and whether it will increase or decrease. The first one is a political one. There will be elections in several EU member states this year. There will also be elections to the European Parliament. And so depending on the outcome of these elections, basically, the forces that will be dominant at the European Parliament and in national governments may have a different understanding of what needs to be done for Ukraine. We have seen Slovakia changing government and changing its stance on Ukraine. That may happen in other EU member states in the coming months. The second uncertainty has to do with internal EU debates regarding the financial instruments to support Ukraine. So we mentioned the 50 billion package, but there is another discussion going on regarding the European Peace Facility, which has been the main vehicle for the EU to finance bilateral military assistance provided by EU member states to Ukraine. Germany is quite critical of the way this has functioned so far and would like a clarification of the rules regarding the European Peace Facility, and it would also like other EU member states to provide more military assistance bilaterally. Germany is one of the main providers of military assistance and has a considerable budget for that. Other EU member states have been doing less, and so Germany says it's okay to increase funding through the European Peace Facility, but A, we need to clarify the rules, and B, we want our partners to do more bilaterally. In terms of what EU member states would need to do this year, I think one of the very important signals they need to send both to Ukraine and to Russia is that they're in for the long game. And that requires putting the resources on the table for more than a couple of months. So the decision on the 50 billion package is important, but there needs to be to be more, and specifically on military assistance, one of the key elements is increasing the defense industrial capacities and increasing basically the output, the industrial output of these industries. That is the case for ammunition. There has been a plan by the EU collectively to increase ammunition productions. The goal was to produce 1 million shells by March. It will probably not be achieved, but it will be achieved maybe a couple of months later. Ammunition is one thing, and it's extremely important. But of course, artillery and the whole range of capacities that that the Ukrainian army needs also require to step up the production. And especially if there are doubts on future U.S. military assistance, this increase in military industrial capacities is key for the Europeans to show that they will be able to continue to support Ukraine in the long run, as long as needed.
All right. Thanks very much for that. So, yeah, more weapons, faster. I guess another question I'd like to follow up on with that is kind of the, you know, you mentioned the idea that Europe, the EU needs to show, display clearly that it's in it for the long haul. But there's also a question going around or comments going around in particular recently about the West, you know, whether there's a need for the West to kind of say what a win for Ukraine would be, or say what the goal is in the end. Now, of course, Ukraine's goal is to drive Russian forces out of Ukraine, which obviously includes Ukraine's borders. So that includes Crimea and all of the Donbass and the other two regions where Russia now has, or actually three, because I guess it has some forces in the Kharkiv region, regions where Russia now has forces and has occupied territory. So I guess my question is, what do you think about that? Is there a need for kind of a determination like in the West and in the EU of what constitutes, you know, victory for Ukraine? What would be enough?
It's probably needed not so much for Ukraine itself, but for our own public to explain why the continued support to Ukraine is in the West's interests. It's probably also needed vis-a-vis Russia, again, to signal that we're not gonna let Ukraine down. Up until now, the dominant narrative has been that the West will support Ukraine for as long as it takes. But as long as it takes for what exactly is never really specified. Mm-hmm. Ukraine, of course, wants to regain control of all of its territory, but we basically don't know whether it will be possible and at what point Ukraine will think, okay, we have achieved enough to now enter a negotiation if that time comes. Maybe an important thing in that regard for Western countries would be to think of what happens if Ukraine doesn't prevail, and what it entails in terms of broader European security and international order. And one key element in that regard would probably be that the use of force by a nuclear state against a non-nuclear state can lead to territorial gains without further consequences. And I don't think that's something either the Europeans or the US, for that matter, are ready to accept, both because it questions the very principle of territorial integrity, which up until now had been rather, the international community had been able to preserve that principle as one key element of the international order. If that would be questioned, and if conquering your neighbor's territory without any real consequences would be seen as legit, that would have highly destabilizing consequences beyond Europe. And then there is the nuclear dimension, the fact that a nuclear state can attack its neighbor and deter action, retaliative action. That would also send the signal to a very large number of countries that the best insurance are nuclear weapons. And so in terms of nuclear proliferation, that is really not a signal that we want to send. So ultimately, I think that there is a good case to be made for Western countries that it's not just about Ukraine's borders, it's about the international order as we know it. And it is in our interest to make sure that this order is preserved as far as possible.
All right. Thanks very much. That's a great point about the, you know, the need to get across the idea of the enormity of what, you know, what, of the consequences if Ukraine does not prevail, if Russia prevails. So thanks very much for that. And I'm going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much for joining me, Marie.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Once again, I've been speaking to Marie Dumoulin, director of the Wider Europe Program at the European Council on Foreign Relations. And my name is Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. This has been The Week Ahead in Russia. Our theme music is «Не стреляй» or «Don't Shoot», a song from the early 1980s by Yuri Shevchuk and DDT. Please be sure to check out my newsletter, The Week in Russia, which covers the latest developments in Russian politics and society, as well as Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Subscribe by visiting www.rferl.org.